So I believe in grace. This continues to be a cornerstone of my spirituality. I've done sermons on grace a few times over the years, and I wanted one last crack at it. And so I was glad when the topic made its way into our monthly worship and learning themes. What is grace? I very simply understand it to be any gift that we did not earn and don't necessarily even deserve. Unconditional love is a great example. So is the simple fact of being alive. I did nothing to deserve being born or to earn being born, and my hunch is none of you did either. Grace, writes Anne Lamott, meets us where we are, but does not leave us where it found us. So she's saying that grace is a gift that impacts us, that somehow changes us. Now, this change may be momentous, or it may be as tiny as a simple change of attitude during our day. Imagine, for example, being mired in a bad day, and we're feeling really pitiful about ourselves, and unexpectedly, suddenly, we get a chance to hold a baby for 5 minutes. The baby melts into the body, you know, warming you literally and figuratively. You feel more peaceful. The self-pity kind of melts away, and you feel a sense of perspective. Then the baby and the baby's parent go on their way, and at the end of the day, you might not even note that this was a significant event from your day, and yet it changed your attitude. That, to me, is an example of grace. Where does grace come from? Who is the giver of grace? Well, let me cut to the chase about this. I don't care. I really don't care where it comes from or who gives it or what gives it. Maybe it's some sort of divine origin. Maybe not. I find myself more in agreement with Dee, our worship leader, when it comes to the origin of grace. It kind of makes sense to me that there's sort of these little droplets of grace that come to us randomly by happenstance rather than some benign being dispensing them from above or wherever that divine being resides. This view of grace origin does not somehow diminish grace for me, that it's sort of random happenstance. In fact, it's just as important and meaningful for me. What really matters to me is that these droplets of grace exist. Whether grace is a random gift from the universe or some sort of intentional gift from God does not change the reality one iota. Whether God, by design, put this baby there for me to hold for 5 minutes, or it just happened that I ran into this baby in a parent, that's great. It doesn't matter. So I don't worry about the source. God, random luck, aliens, I don't care. How can we help grace come into our lives? That's such a great question because it's good. It has the power to transform us in small and large ways. So let's figure out how to get more of it. We can't. By definition, we can't. We can't earn it. We can't deserve it. It's beyond our control. That's not, like Anne Lamott says, some abracadabra, you can make it come, you can't do some magical prayer or get your Harry Potter wand out and wave that. It just doesn't work that way. It comes from beyond. But that said, I think that we can cultivate the possibility of grace coming. And a great way to do this is to create time and space in our lives for spirituality. And I define spirituality as connection with what's most important to us. And it's amazing how often the day can go by when we never actually do that. If from the moment you roll out of bed until the moment you fall back in bed at the end of the day and turn off the light, if you have just been going, 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 you make it a little more difficult for grace to arrive. I'd love to hold your baby, but I've got an assignment due, and geez, I'm so busy. Poor me. Sorry, bye. You just cut off the possibility of grace coming, right? You're still squarely on that pity pot, stuck in the same place you've been for a while. Grace has basically come knocking at your door, and you get down and yell through the mail slot, sorry, gone, get out of here, bye. For me, I find personally that grace does not visit me as often, it seems, when I don't exercise or meditate or eat well or go out in nature regularly, when I'm not grounded spiritually and in my body. When I don't do these things, I live sort of disconnected from what's most important. I live obliviously without intentionality. And to be honest, I found myself a little more often in this place lately. And I know the answer, which is, even though it feels like I'm sort of drowning in work here and trying to get the house ready to sell and exploring new work possibilities and feeling bad for myself because my beloved's elsewhere, I've got to even then make time for the spiritual and physical grounding. And unfortunately for me, this seems like a lesson I have to keep learning over and over again. All of this leads me to another fundamental truth about grace, that we have to notice it. It does not, as Anne Lamott writes in today's reading, announce itself with silver bells. Now we'll get the bells. Oh, come on. Let's try it again. There we go. Wouldn't that be nice? Oh, excuse me, Grace is arriving. Yes, I'd love to hold that baby. Excellent. But no, it doesn't come that way. Sometimes it actually almost is that obvious. And even then, somehow we miss it. And so I know for myself, sometimes I fail to notice the little droplets of grace that come. And sometimes the whole rivers of grace that flow my way. I hold the baby for a while even, and I think, I got to get to that assignment. So it's like grace came, knocked on my door, I let it in and then said, yeah, go sit down, and I go about my business completely ignoring it. So maybe more than anything else, spiritual practice is about raising our level of awareness so that we notice when these graceful things happen. And an aside here, I came to the conclusion this week that obliviousness may be the second great enemy of living a spiritual life. The first one would be fear, and I think the second one might be obliviousness. So I'm revising my top seven deadly sins, and I'm adding obliviousness. Well, this morning I want to share some widely varying examples of grace coming into my life, and I do so in the hope that you will think about ways that grace maybe has come into your life. My first moment involves forgiveness. When someone forgives us, that is truly a moment of grace, especially when we've done something really hurtful. There's really nothing we can do to deserve or earn forgiveness. Even apologizing from the bottom of our heart, even straightening out our act so we don't do it again, that doesn't give us the right to be forgiven. We cannot make someone else forgive us. It's their free decision. So forgiveness is a gift that we don't deserve, we don't earn, just like grace. It's an example of grace. The most powerful gift of forgiveness I've received in my life came fairly early in my relationship with my life partner, Amy, kind of well before we were married. Without that gift, everything that has unfolded for us and our family, beginning with the kids, would have never happened. There's a gift that kept on giving. That act of forgiveness is truly a really, really big deal in my story. Going down to a much smaller experience, I've had the gift of grace visit plenty of times when I've been working on sermons. I've shared before about the time I was working really late on a Saturday night before we had the Saturday service, and I had nothing. And I was getting more tired and more anxious, which is a really bad combination. Nothing came, and suddenly in popped this image of an art piece I had studied in college. And the whole sermon came out, gelled, almost instantly. Where did that come from? The ancient Greeks might say the muse. Or was it just a random firing of neurons? I don't care, but I was sure happy. I had a similar experience this week, a little less dramatic, but I was a bit stuck with this sermon, and I found that I had to work on the sermon while trick-or-treating was going on Friday. So every 30 seconds, the doorbell rings, the chihuahua goes nuts, I get up, give out candy, and I sat down thinking, this is really not the best sermon writing atmosphere, right? And yet somehow that's when the sermon really came. A gift beyond me, I don't know. A moment of grace for me as a parent was the incredible gift of having two very different children and the realization that while nurturing is important, so too is hardwiring. Because here you got the same gene pool and, you know, the same sort of nurturing, but somehow they turned out so differently. So somehow it felt like it took the pressure a bit off me as dad. Yes, I need to do my best to raise them, but how they turned out would not completely ride on how Amy and I raised them, so that in at least some ways they were beyond our ability to completely ruin. And that was such a liberating moment of insight. It's amazing. I remember a very graceful moment in the midst of my mom's dying, which of course was a painful experience. I was talking with my mom after she had heard from her doctor that, hey, we've done all we can, I'm recommending hospice. And she had fought like hell for 5 years to stay alive. And she made the decision then to stop, to think more about comfort management. And as we talked, I mentioned to my mom, you know, now that we're not really worried about, like, you getting better, you could have a martini. So she loved her martinis. But 5 years earlier, she said, yeah, I got to give them up. It's not going to help me get better. So she did. So I tell her this, and she looks at me like, really? You're not just pulling my leg, are you? You know? So I said, no, it's true, it's true. And she got this big smile, and it really was the last smile she had. It's a moment I'll cherish. Now, unfortunately, she died before she got the martini, which I felt a little bad about, but then I realized, you know, just the thinking about it was a gift for her and caused that smile and that moment of joy in the midst of a lot of pain. And so that was gift enough. Here's a recent gift of grace. As many of you may recall, I predicted early last month that the Supreme Court of the United States would rule on marriage equality at the end of this term in late June after I'm done being your minister. I lamented in advance not getting to do the ceremonies of some loved ones in the fellowship like Lehia and Miriam, especially those like them who had applied for their license in June but lost the right to marry during that 5-day waiting period that the Outagamie County clerk refused to waive. Well, I don't think Supreme Court prognostication is going to be my next calling because literally, as you know, the very next day, the court decided not to review the appeals court ruling upholding marriage in our state, marriage equality, and so marriage equality arrived, this time, I think, for good. You may also recall that one of the consolations I shared about thinking maybe this would happen in late June was that my colleague, Reverend Leah Hart Landsberg, would get to do some ceremonies and further cement her place in the heart of the fellowship and our wider community. Well, as it turned out, I was on a flight to New York that Monday morning when that decision or non-decision was handed down by the Supreme Court. And so I land, turn on the phone, and what happened? Oh my gosh. But I was in New York for several days, so Leah got to do several weddings, she got to be in the front page of the paper, and then I still got to do Miriam's and Lehia's ceremony this past week. All good. All beyond my control. All grace. And there was another gift this past week connected with Lehia's and Miriam's wedding. It was, of course, a sweet and amazing honor to officiate at their ceremony. After the wedding, we sat around in one of those round tables in the fellowship hall. So the two of them, their witnesses, some supporters and loved ones from the fellowship, Leah, me, and a volunteer photographer from the fellowship. And we had wedding cake, and it was just a wonderful conversation, full of laughter and reminiscing and incredible joy. And I thought to myself for a moment, you know what? This is as good as it gets in ministry. And so I really cherished it, because I know I'm not going to have moments like that with you pretty soon. So it was just such a gift, and I will remember that conversation for a long, long time, as long as I remember doing their ceremony in here. So in this case, grace knocked at the door, and I let it in and sat down and had a piece of cake with it. My recent weeks of a little bit of scooching and more than the usual stalls and setbacks gave way, and I got to move my sleeping bag forward 3 feet. Yes. And a final moment of grace from this past week. We're currently running a leadership development class, and at the end of Tuesday evening's class, everyone was asked to share a response to this question. What part of belonging to this faith community touches your spirit most deeply? Well, the sharing was just incredible as we went around the room. And I was so moved. This spiritual community does touch people in such different and awesome ways. So again, a gift. So I close with these questions. What are some of your big and small experiences of grace? How might you answer the question, what part of belonging to this faith community touches your spirit most deeply? I'm hoping we can hear some stories during the congregational response, and that these are questions you can contemplate over the next week.